Hi. Good to see y'all. As a kid, can I tell you a story? As a kid, most of my holidays were spent at my grandma's house. Let me introduce you. On the left in the front row is the bass player from this morning. Wasn't he cute? And the weaselly kid in the middle is Trey. Yeah. And Chloe is sitting on that man who has hair's lap. I had hair once. I remember those days. That was nice. My mom is on the left in the back row, and Grandma Searpoy is in the middle right there. Grandma Searpoy is kind of a funny name. We've been arguing about how to pronounce it our whole lives, but Grandma Searpoy had an amazing impact on my life. She's always been kind of larger than life for me. My mom is one of six kids, so there's tons of cousins on that side of the family. On holidays, we could make whole football teams and go out in the backyard and play outside. In the summer times, there was a shaved ice place right up the road. We could walk up and get, the Hawaiian shaved ice that's just sugar water, just one, it's cavity in a snow cone container, right? And across the other side of the street, there was a TCBY when I was a kid. Do you guys remember TCBY? Whatever happened to TCBY? I love that place, and you could always, always talk my grandma into ice cream. You didn't even have to try. Like, she volunteered to take us a lot of times. My grandma put a scoop of ice cream in her bowl of cereal in the morning because she liked it a little thicker. Grandma. She worked at a school cafeteria growing up, so she could not make a meal for less than 100 people. Just, she thought in those quantities, like feeding an entire school of people. And so, and she also, it was a time when everything was made by scratch, right? I go into the schools once a week. I see what they are feeding our kids. It is not homemade meals from scratch, right? If mashed potatoes were on the menu when my grandma was a lunch lady, it meant that somebody got there early and peeled actual potatoes. Can you imagine? Real potatoes. So, that was her idea of cooking for huge people, huge amounts of people, and with tons, that was just how she saw things. My grandma's mashed potatoes, Heidi was a little concerned the first time she saw grandma's mashed potatoes. They are yellow because that's how much butter you put in the mashed potatoes. So good. Oh, my goodness. One year, Grandma had enough. Grandma Searpoy did. And she decided that she was done making turkey and she was done with the stuffing. She didn't want to make yellow mashed potatoes anymore. No more of her flawless, impeccable, lump-free gravy. No more of the Jell-O salad that was named after my Uncle Donald. I don't know why. Nobody really knows to this day why it's called Donald salad, but it is called Donald salad. And everybody knows what you're talking about. And she said, I don't want to do any of that anymore. She decided that it was time for the kids to take over, right? No more turkey from Grandma. Now it's time for all the aunts and uncles to take over, right? Holidays could still be at her house, which I think is because she didn't want to drive anywhere. She's smart, my grandma. But you can use the kitchen. It's not like you have to bring everything prepared, but Grandma is no longer in charge. And I remember the year when this news spread. It wasn't like there was a formal announcement or anything, but news quickly spread among all the cousins and all the aunts and uncles that Grandma wasn't going to make Thanksgiving anymore. No more yellow mashed potatoes. No more of her incredible apple pie. And it was like a scandal, oh my goodness, can you imagine? My grandpa died, her husband died very young, is before I was born. And so I think it was sort of her way of saying, I'm done, right? Like, I raised the second half of my kids on my own, and now it's time for everyone to make Thanksgiving dinner for me. Here's what I noticed. When the responsibility went from grandma, and exclusively grandma making Thanksgiving, to the aunts and uncles making Thanksgiving dinner, well, suddenly, Grandma had a lot more time to play with the grandkids. And I remember we would always play Trouble. She had the first ever manufactured game of Trouble, you know, the one with the pop button. We played Trouble with her 100 times, you know, on any given Thanksgiving. She taught me how to gamble. Grandma Searpoy did. We played a game with nickels called Blitz, which I've never heard anybody else knows how to play, but she always had this change jar that she would give us money and we would play. And, you know, as a kid, you won 20 nickels and you think you're loaded, you know. That's Grandma Searpoy for you. Or Go Fish, you know, if you weren't quite old enough to play Blitz, we got to play Go Fish. That was the interesting thing was, okay, well, Grandma's not making dinner anymore, but I got time with her. She was with the grandkids, right? So, I need everyone's help. Can you all do me a favor? The air conditioning is on, or the heat is on, or whatever. The air is circulating in this room. What I need you to do is take off your shoe, please. Just one is fine. Everybody take off a shoe and hold it up. Come on. Really? There's Kay's shoe. Kay's got hers off. Good job. Logan Anderson got his shoe off. Yeah, there's Alyssa Murphy. Everybody's shoe? Thank you all very much. That will facilitate the stepping on of toes that is about to happen. Oh, y'all fell for it, all of y'all. That's wonderful. Good job. Yeah. Today, you can put your shoes back on now. The air conditioner isn't on that high, so let's get those feet covered back up, okay? This morning, I wrestled with this text this week, and I thought, what do I need to present to the church this morning? Okay, and I'm gonna do a little toe stepping, but it's loving toe stepping. So can we handle that? Passage comes from the book of Luke, chapter 10, starting verse 38. You can open up in your Bibles there, or it's on the screen behind me. Luke chapter 10, verse 38. Here's what it says. As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me." "Martha, Martha," the Lord answered, "you are worried and upset about many things. But few things are needed, or indeed only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her." It's an interesting picture that we have of Jesus' life, isn't it? He's traveling around. He ends up in a city called Bethany, where Mary and Martha live, whose brother is, anybody know? Lazarus, the guy that's raised from the dead, right? So this was a very important family in Jesus' life. Jesus is in town, so they invite him to come and be with them. And I want you all to try and picture the scene, right? It's not hard to imagine. Think about your Thanksgiving dinners that's about to happen, okay? You surely have a Mary in your family, yes, who is content to sit and play with the grandkids. And chances are you have a Martha in your family who is running around making sure everything is ready and maybe getting a little irritated and throwing snippy comments at people from the kitchen. Right? Do you all have a Mary and a Martha in your family? Huh? No. Franny says no, but that is incorrect. I'm just saying. And by the way, I will mix up Mary and Martha 10 times during this sermon. I do it all the time. It doesn't matter how many times I teach on this passage. I switch them around. So if I get them mixed up, just let me know, okay? It's interesting because it's sort of like my grandma before, when she was running around like a crazy person getting dinner ready, and my grandma after, when she had time to play with the grandkids. That's the picture that I see in this story. And if I were to guess, correct me if I'm wrong, I would say as a society, as Rockfordians here, we tend to be like Martha. Am I right? On a whole, we tend to be busy people, okay? You meet somebody in the grocery store that you haven't seen in a while, and chances are, at some point, one of you is going to say, "Oh my goodness, I've just been so busy." Am I right? Okay. Somebody hasn't been in church in a while, so you give them a call, and you're like, "Hey, I haven't seen you in a while." Chances are, they're going to say, "Well, I've just been so busy." Right? Am I right? Some of you are going, well, I said that just last week, actually, right? We all do it. It's like the first thing that we talk about is our busyness and how much we have going on, right? Mary was very different than that. She does not seem concerned at all by the busyness that is going on around her. She's just sitting at the feet of Jesus listening. It's very interesting. You imagine the look she was getting from Martha? Like the little sibling rivalry that was going on. Jesus, tell her to help me. I'm driving. I know I'm going crazy in here. Mary's just sitting there, listening to Jesus, have all the time in the world, right? Which, according to this passage, is the correct thing to do, right? He did not praise Martha's go-to-itness. He did not praise her because she's preparing this wonderful banquet for him. He said the correct thing to do is sit at his feet and listen. All right, now this morning, because I'm foolish, I'm going to divide the congregation into generations, okay? First, we're going to talk to the young people, then we're going to talk to the middle-aged people, and then we're going to talk to the old people. It is your job to put yourself in the correct category. I'm not going to be doing that, okay? So, because that would lead to danger, bad things, right? Okay? So first, I'm going to talk to young people, okay? The young people in the room. Now, it's Family Sunday. That means we're all in here together, right? All the squirmy kids are in here today. So this is to young people. I'm talking to you right now. Now, first thing I want to do is I want to read the text behind me, okay? So young people, all together, everybody read with me the passage, okay? As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me." "Martha, Martha," the Lord answered, "you are worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed, or indeed only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her." Very good, guys. So, if I were to tell you one thing that I noticed since being back in the U.S., we've been here a little over a year now, it is the busyness of our culture, and specifically the busyness of our young people. I think that's one of the biggest differences I notice about my childhood is how much more stuff there is for kids to do. There are so many things that you can be involved in, sports, drama, band, theater, homework hopefully is in there at some point, trays and robotics. There's tons of things. Lance and Chloe are seniors this year. We're looking at class rings, right? So, you know, we'll be taking up an offering later for those class rings. You go to the website, right? And you know how on one side of the ring you can usually put an activity that you were involved with during school, kind of a memory of that. And I look on this website, I'm just kind of playing around trying to figure out, you know, how much crying I need to do. And the list of activities that you can put on your class ring, there's hundreds of them. There's so many, they don't even provide a list. You just have to search because there's no way that you can scroll through that many things to finally get to robotics or cross country, or I'm not kidding, checkers. Checkers was something that you could put on your class ring, which I thought, who plays checkers? Like, is this like a competition or what is checkers on your class ring? Great game, but I don't know that I would put it on my ring, you know. But anyway, so checkers was on there, and I was just amazed at how much stuff kids can be involved in. And obviously somebody wants checkers on the ring or they wouldn't offer it, right? So that means every one of those items that shows up on the rings is something that's taking up a young person's time somewhere. It was fascinating to me. I should have printed out the list. You know, young people, you guys are in the phase of life where habits start, right? All of the older people are going, yep, that is very true. All of us can look back in our lives, and to some extent, we can see how good and bad habits started way back when, okay, when we were young people. And those habits, good or bad habits, they're very, very difficult to break. That means if you're on a good path, if you make good choices now, it's going to be easier for you to make good choices later. If you're on a not so great path, it's going to be very hard to break that and get to the right path as you get older. So I want to ask you guys how you're doing, young people. You feel like you're sprinting from place to place, from activity to activity, and you realize that in the last week, in the last 2 weeks, in the last month, you haven't spent any time sitting at the foot of Jesus listening. Man, we are bad at that, aren't we? I'm not just picking on young people, I mean as a whole. How good a job do we do of sitting at Jesus' feet and listening? Not so great. Now, would Jesus say that sitting and listening is better, or would he say adding another activity to your class ring is better? All of us sitting here this morning will go, well, obviously, sitting and listening to him is better, right? But how many of us are actually doing that? Or how many young people are thinking of one more activity to add to the day, one more two-hour block of time on a Thursday afternoon that you can fill with something because you can? How many of you guys are there? You guys are you young people are forming habits right now that are going to affect the rest of your lives. And if you start forming good habits right now, you'll be way better off. So which ones are winning? The busyness or the sitting and doing nothing but listening to Jesus? Put that on a scale, and what do you spend time doing? I don't know what that is. What is it? Oh, a computer game. That is one that you guys... PlayStation, computer games, those are all fine. They're good things, right? But according to Jesus, what is better? Sitting and listening, right? Very good. Okay, ready? Middle-aged people. It's going to be very interesting to see who calls themselves middle-aged, isn't it? I'm going to be watching, okay? I want to talk to middle-aged people right now, okay? The Philpotts are middle-aged. I love you guys. Middle-aged people, read this text with me, okay? As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me." "Martha, Martha," the Lord answered, "you are worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed, or indeed only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her." Very good. So, middle-aged people like myself, who still have kids at home, how much of your family life is spent carting your kids from one activity to the next? A lot. How much of your family time is spent sitting still and listening to Jesus? I guess we're done, right? End of sermon. Tough, huh? That's why I had you take your shoes off. I totally get it. And I want you to know that I am preaching to myself, okay? For every stinging comment I make today, it's coming right back at me, okay? I want my kids to have every opportunity available. And I know that we all feel that way. I want my kids to try stuff and have fun. And I want them to have opportunities to get ahead and learn a skill that might help them get a job someday. But are we helping our kids to be like Mary and choose the better thing? I'm not so good at that. Are we showing them by our example that time spent with Jesus is far better than anything else in their lives? I remember it was a couple years before we left Italy, and I had a little bit of a meltdown, which happens from time to time, right? Kind of high-strung, and school was about to start, and I was looking at the calendar, the family calendar of what we had going, and at that time, I believe Lance and Chloe were about to start high school. Trey was still in middle school, but he was on a soccer team that had three practices a week and one game on Sundays. Francesca was in gymnastics, and it was a couple times a week. We had church two times, once on Wednesday, once on Sunday. And I remember thinking there was not one single free block of time in the entire week. And it freaked me out. I was sent to start a new church in Italy, right? And I really believe that the way to do that in Italy is around a table. Italians are very social people, and they love to spend time together, and they love meals spent with their friends and family. And I looked at my life as the guy who was sent there to start a new church, and I realized I have no free time to do that with anybody. Even if God, like, plopped somebody in my lap and said, and that person came up to me and said, I would really like to know about Jesus. Can we have dinner together sometime? I would have to say no. I didn't have a single spare evening to do that with. And I thought, this is crazy. We can't do this anymore, right? I mean, and I was in a unique circumstance as a church planner, but really, is what I did in Italy any different than what every one of us is supposed to do in Rockford? No. So look at your calendar. Do you look and think, if God put somebody in my lap, and I guarantee you he is, if God plopped somebody in my lap who wanted nothing else but to know about Jesus, could you even find the time to tell them about Jesus? It is tough, is it not? Are you guys with me? Please understand, I'm not talking about having like a margin in my calendar or a buffer in my calendar so that I have a chance to fill it up with another activity for the kids, right? I'm talking about having free time blocked on the schedule for God to work. Isn't it crazy that our busyness can actually hinder God from working through us? I mean, that is frightening to me that I can let dumb appointments take over divine appointments in my life, right? Yeah, man, I'm glad God forgives us. I would just really hate, you know, someday in heaven I'm going to have to say, yeah, I didn't have a chance to work in that person's life. I couldn't be a light here because I was really busy. I don't want to have that conversation, do you all? So how can we lead our families to be more like Mary and less like Martha? How do we arrange our schedules purposely so that rest is a part of what we do as a family? Rest. Can you imagine putting rest on the calendar? So that we have Sabbath built in. It's like a non-negotiable that we don't let get interrupted. So that we have opportunities to say yes to the opportunities that God is putting in our laps. Which may, of course, mean saying no to other good things. That's the tough part. Nobody here is saying, oh yeah, we got to make the choices between good and bad. Well, no, but none of us would choose the bad choice, right? It's the choice between the good thing and the best thing. Ooh, that'll drive you crazy. Was it Martha wrong for preparing a dinner for Jesus? No. But she was doing a good thing. Mary was doing a great thing, right? It may mean that we tell our kids no to another activity or another sport because as a family, we haven't built rest into our lives. We have to teach them. We have to model. We have to show them what it means to be like Mary and to choose what is better. Sitting at the feet of Jesus is the most important job that we as parents have. There's nothing else more important. And I think it's so weird. We spend so much of our time getting our kids ready to live in the world, right? How to get a job, how to pay bills, skills that they can learn, get good grades, but how much time do we spend teaching our kids to live in the kingdom of God? I mean, what, like, is there even a comparison sometimes? And this world, this earthly world, it only lasts 70, 80 years, right? The kingdom of God lasts forever. So why aren't we spending way more time getting our kids ready to live in that culture, in that kingdom? I love y'all. Remember, I'm preaching to me too. Okay, older people. You guys ready to read with me? Older people, let's read together. As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, He came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me." "Martha, Martha," the Lord answered, "you are worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed, or indeed only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her." So what happens when the kids are grown and everybody's left the house? I thought a lot about what is Mary and Martha, what does this story mean to people who are retired, who don't have a 9-to-5 anymore. And I thought a lot about my grandma and how she passed the torch to her kids when it was time for her to rest and do what she saw as an important thing, right? The key is not that grandma stopped making mashed potatoes so she could go sit in the Lazy Boy, right? She stopped making mashed potatoes so that she could be with her grandkids. And that, I think, is the key. Jesus didn't say, don't be busy. He's saying, be busy doing the right things, right? Be busy doing the things that will advance the kingdom of God. I'm incredibly thankful for my grandma that she made that choice. And I got to spend a lot of time with her in family gatherings when she made that decision. Last night, there was a funeral at the church. And I got to see this idea in action. And it was really cool. Like a lot of funerals, the church prepares a meal for the family afterwards. And there was a group of ladies who quietly, humbly appeared at just the right time and made this wonderful dinner for a family that was grieving and hurting. And then as soon as the dinner was over, the dishes magically disappeared and everything went back to normal and the church kind of reset itself. And I thought, man, I think that these ladies came in here and did that on a Saturday when there was a million other things that they could have been doing. I think they did that because they have spent time sitting at the feet of Jesus. And they knew that it's really important to take care of a family that's hurting like that. It's so funny. I mentioned this to the family as I was speaking. Nobody remembers a word that I said during the funeral yesterday. You know what it's like when you're at a funeral, you're just numb and you're not really paying attention. And I told them, I said, no one is going to remember a word that I say today. So don't worry. I encourage them to grieve in the way that they needed to grieve. But what they will remember was a church that opened their arms and showed hospitality to them, where they could just sit down and have a meal and relax, and where they could take boxes of food home with them afterwards so that they're set for days and days and don't have to worry about it. That is something that they are going to remember. So as I've chewed on this passage all week, I've thought that this passage is really about keeping the main thing the main thing, right? I feel like younger people in this church need to see the example of older Christians who have been doing this for years and years and years, consistently putting the main thing first in their life, and that's sitting at the foot of Jesus. That's what we need. I think it would... There's an election coming up. I don't know if anyone's heard. And guys, I feel like this... I'm going to be honest. It's almost a suffocating pessimism in America right now. Is there anyone who is happy about where we're going? You know, like, it's just like, ugh. But do you know, this is sort of a tangent. Will you forgive me a tangent? I feel like what younger people need is to see older people saying, yeah, this situation is bizarre and weird and we don't know how we got here, but God is still on the throne. And November 10th, or it doesn't matter who is in charge, because God has not moved one single inch off of the throne, right? Instead of an older generation that's longing for back in my day, instead of a younger generation who sees an older generation who sees young people and says, man, kids these days, I don't know. What we need is stability and people to say, it's going to be okay. We as a country, we as a church have weathered things like this before and we will be fine. Everyone take a breath. That's what I feel like we need from an older generation. I would love to see an older generation of people here at Central who somehow got busier after retirement because they decided to spend their time doing things that matter for the kingdom. Wouldn't that be something? In the book of Titus, Paul, there's this little section where Paul talks to the older women, and he wants the older women to teach the younger women basically how to live as Christians. And he gives four or five examples of things that older women are supposed to teach younger women. What if that happened, like on a literal way, in a literal way in the church? What if the older generation came alongside the younger generation and said, let me help, let me show you. I've done this 50 times. In our small groups, almost all of our small groups have mixed ages. There's older people, younger people, high schoolers, no high schoolers, college students. They're all mixed together. And that's on purpose because I think we need opportunities to rub shoulders with each other every now and then. Younger people need older people to say, the poopy diaper phase will pass, right? And we need older people to say, the crazy toddler stage will pass, and they won't be teenagers forever, and that the college bill will get paid, you know? Like, we need people to have been there and done that. We also need older people to hear from the younger people and say, hey, here's what we're facing. Here's the kind of church that we would like to be a part of. Here are the changes that we would like to see to our Sunday morning worship so that I feel like I can bring a friend and they won't think we're dinosaurs. I think that we need to be brave and bold and courageous and dive right on into those kinds of conversations, even if it makes us a little bit uncomfortable sometimes. So I'm going to conclude today. I'm going to talk to everybody all together, right? How do we improve at this sitting at the feet of Jesus thing? What is it that we need to do? What is it like for us in Rockford, Illinois in 2016 to be like Mary and consider sitting at the feet of Jesus to be the most important thing? I think the first thing we need to do is, you guys are going to be impressed by this one. The first thing we need to do is listen to what Jesus has to say. I think we need to open up the Gospels and read them to find out what Jesus says to us. We don't get the privilege of physically sitting at Jesus' feet, but we have a lot of what he said and did during his life. Our small groups are studying the Sermon on the Mount right now. It's three chapters. That's nothing but Jesus talking, right? There's no commentary. There's no narrative. It's just Jesus started here and he went all the way through here. Now, the ironic thing, and this leads me to point two, Jesus would never say, hey, just read the words, read my words. You've got to put them into practice, right? The Sermon on the Mount is full of that kind of stuff, that we have to read what Jesus says, sit at his feet, but then when we get up from his feet, it's time to put into practice what we just learned. I think that's one way that we put him first in our life. His command was for us to make disciples. I know you guys probably get tired of hearing me say that, but it's true. That is our first job as Christians, is to make disciples. Make copies of yourself. I want everything that we do here at Central to be looked at under that goal. If the goal is make disciples, then we need to look at everything and figure out, does that help us make disciples? Does it harm us from making disciples? Is it neutral? Do we need to tweak things so that we focus more on making disciples? And not just on a corporate level, but on an individual level. Does this activity help me make disciples in my life, individually? Does this job help me make disciples? Does this video game help me make disciples? Whatever it is, I want to look at it from that perspective. If that's the goal, then everything else has to fall underneath that. And I mentioned this earlier, but I think we have to leave space in our life for God to work in us. We have to have time, not like you wake up on a Saturday and realize there's nothing on it, and that hasn't happened in 3 months. I'm talking about on a regular, consistent basis, having space for God to work. I mentioned this earlier. It really does scare me that my busyness can impede God from working through me just because I don't have time to give him. And that's going to mean that we have to say no to some good things so that we can say yes to the better thing. That is so hard to do. But we do it so that we give God an opportunity to work in us and through us. I said this earlier, Martha did a good thing. She wasn't sinning by preparing a meal for Jesus, but she wasn't doing the best thing. I think another way that we sit at the feet of Jesus is through communion. The day before Jesus was crucified, he had a meal with his disciples, didn't he? They passed around a loaf of bread, and he said, this is my body. He passed around the wine, and he said, this is my blood. And he asked them to keep doing that. And Christians for thousands of years have been celebrating and commemorating his broken body and the blood that was spilled for us by taking communion. We are about to go into a time of communion, and you guys saw the tables all around the building. Here's what I want to do, okay? Yes, this is a communion time. And there's plenty of time for everybody to go through the line. But what I really would like you guys to do is right now start thinking, God, is there someone in this room right now with me that needs to be encouraged? Is there somebody that really could use me to pray for them? Guys, if Kay's up here at the piano and she says 50 little circles of people praying, man, she can play a chorus for 20 minutes. It doesn't matter how long it takes, right? This is a time for the church to be the church and for us to take care of each other and to encourage each other, maybe even lovingly rebuke each other, to hug each other, to pray with people, okay? And then grab communion together and take it as a group, okay? That's what we've set this time aside to be. I'm going to pray. There's going to be some music, and then we invite everyone to take communion. Go grab someone and pray with them, encourage them, hug them, do whatever you feel like God is leading you to do. I'm going to pray with you all.